Does your church need a full-time or backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is genuine organ leadership using your instrument with your specific selections when you need it. You can try it out for free with our demo unit, which allows you and your members to hear and see the virtual organist without obligation and without a sales pitch. For more details, go to churchmusicsolutions.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. The headline from the Washington Post has to do with the Boy Scouts possibly reversing a national ban against gays as members and leaders. And I read this and I thought to myself, I've seen this before. And maybe it was just the first time I started to pay attention to the issue. But it was late in my seminary training. This would have been about 1988, 1989, late in the 1980s. And it was a national story that people were talking about. The homosexual lobby was trying to make inroads with the Boy Scouts, trying to get the Boy Scouts to drop a ban or something of that nature. My memory's a little vague after a quarter of a century. Why is it that the homosexual lobby has had this, well, 25-year-plus infatuation with this national organization, the Boy Scouts? Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris is our guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute, based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hey, Todd.
Why? I mean, this has been a story that's come back around on a pretty regular basis for the better part of 25 years. What is it with the homosexual lobby and the Boy Scouts?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know what it is with the homosexual lobby and the Boy Scouts, but it seems to be very important to them, you know, to be accepted openly within the ranks of Boy Scout leadership, and so they have been working at it for a long time, and it looks like the Boy Scouts are getting worn down.
What does it tell you? I mean, because we're dealing here with something that was at one time, at least, kind of a quintessential American institution. There was few things more patriotic than a young boy donning a Cub Scout or a Boy Scout uniform and earning his merit badges and doing all the things that Boy Scouts do. Is that part of the reason the homosexual lobby seems to want in?
Well, you know, there's something to that, you know, and in other words, it would be kind of a merit badge for them, right? It would be their badge of honor if they were accepted inside something as quintessentially American and mainstream as the Boy Scouts. And I think that's the main thing that it's about for them, is to be accepted. You know, it's a badge of acceptance to have this ban on openly gay scout leaders removed from the Boy Scouts. And I think that part of what's going on behind it is that there's financial pressure being exerted on them. You know, that people are, you know, some of their big donors are pressuring them. They're, according to some of the news reports I've seen, there are a couple of people highly placed within the Boy Scouts. It looks like people on their board. Basically the rich people who sit on boards of nonprofit, you know, foundation type organizations, a couple of them are steering the ship in this direction. And so it's, you know, it seems to be all part of the process of normalizing homosexual practice in American life.
You mentioned the financial pressure, and it comes by way of withholding donations. Yes. That the Boy Scout of America do depend upon. Merck Corporation Foundation, Intel Foundation, UPS, United Way have stopped or postponed donations, according to the Washington Post, due to last year's affirmation of the what the Washington Post is calling an anti-gay policy in the Boy Scouts of America. But this is kind of straight from page one of the playbook of the gay lobby, isn't it? Financial pressure?
Well, yes, I think that's right. You know, and in other words, they have their allies in the corporate community, and they're using the pressure that the corporate community can bring to bear to steer other parts of society, you know. So you know, these are investments that they have made, that the gay lobby has made into becoming part of the mainstream of American life and corporate life and so on and so forth. And now they're using those positions of influence to drive other things, you know. And so, for me, I guess the message here, or the thing people need to think about here, is that it all starts off innocently enough, you know, that we should really not discriminate against people in the workplace based on their sexual orientation, and that's all well and good. That's fine, you know. If you can do the job, you should be allowed to do the job, and so on and so forth. But that seems not to be the end of the story. Because once a person is in the workplace, then they use their position of authority to steer the whole organization towards the larger objectives of the gay lobby, which is not limited to making their company and their employer as successful as possible in the marketplace. You know, they've got other objectives that they're working towards. And they're using their positions of authority inside companies to do that. And I think that's the pattern, and I think that's in a sense the story for people to see that. And of course, for an employer to say, well, gosh, I don't want you to work for me anymore because the objectives of the gay lobby are not my objectives, and you're taking up a lot of corporate time pressuring us internally to steer us towards the gay lobby, and that doesn't really do anything for me, and so I want to fire you because of that, or I don't want to promote you because of that, because I don't think you're really working hand in glove with the overall objectives of this company. I think they'd have a hard time firing somebody on that basis because of the anti-discrimination law. It would be tricky to fire somebody. So I think people need to kind of understand that there's more at stake than anti-discrimination policy, that those kind of statutes, those kind of laws, that kind of case law and so on, it seems like it's innocent enough, actually carries with it in its wake more than people may realize, which is that your company, companies that hire homosexual employees or people who are committed to the gay lobby, let's put it that way, that those people now have greater room to operate inside your corporation. And your options for limiting their advancement or removing them from their jobs are really much more limited. Now, the reason I kind of hesitate a little bit to say that is that I know, and you know, and probably everybody listening here knows, that not every single person who is same-sex attracted shares all the objectives of the gay lobby or would use their position inside a company to steer the company towards the objectives of the gay lobby. Not everybody does that, but enough people do it that it's, I think, quite tricky now for corporations to navigate that, and I think that's something people need to be aware of.
I'm curious, what do you think the result would be if the Boy Scouts of America capitulate to the financial pressure, the other kind of pressures that are being put under here, and drop their 102-year ban on openly gay members and leaders, what would become of the Boy Scouts, do you think?
Well, you know, it will go the way of the Girl Scouts. You know, the Girl Scouts has turned into, has allowed itself to be kind of taken over by certain kinds of feminist agendas. You know, so the Girl Scouts receive money from, from different of the more feminist organizations, and they get steered towards stuff that really isn't as mainstream as you think, and so there will be a continuation of the policy of steering people toward the idea that homosexuality is okay, and not only okay but to be celebrated, that men and women are interchangeable, that there's nothing distinctive about being a boy, or there's nothing distinctive about being a girl, right? I mean, because that's really what's at stake in the debate over, for example, you know, whether a same-sex couple is the same as an opposite-sex couple. What is really at stake is what is the meaning of the human body and its gendered nature, you know? And so, you know, for an organization that's called the Boy Scouts, to go down the path of androgyny, which is really that's where this has to go. You know, that's where the whole move to normalize homosexuality and the move to redefine marriage, that's where those things are headed, is toward a kind of claim that men and women are interchangeable, and that the human body is somehow negotiable. You know, what your gender is negotiable. That's where the ship is being headed. And so I think it would be tragic if we lose one of the last organizations that exists to help socialize young boys into being men. You know, if you start to lose that, I think it's a tragedy.
With only a minute here, I'd like your thoughts on 40 years of Roe v. Wade, and if you would, tell us about the two March for Life events that you participated in and what you learned there with only about a minute or so.
Well, you know, we've had 40 years of Roe v. Wade. It's like 40 years in the desert, you know. And I think an awful lot of people didn't realize just what legalized abortion on demand was going to mean when it came in 40 years ago. But what it has meant, in fact, is a whole industry of obscuring the truth about the human person and the human body. And, you know, what exactly is it inside the woman's womb? If the fetus isn't a baby, what is it exactly? You know, whole academic departments have become intellectually corrupted trying to tap dance their way around those kind of questions. And so I don't think anybody fully anticipated how far gone we would become by our need to justify and rationalize what we're doing, never mind the other assaults on human dignity that have come. But I have to say it has been very heartening to participate in some of the commemorative events around the country. We had, here in San Diego, we had our first ever Walk for Life in San Diego. And for our first effort, we had about 3,000 people show up in Balboa Park. And then exactly a week later, they had the 9th annual West Coast Walk for Life in San Francisco, at which 50,000 people showed up. 50,000 people, pro-life people, marching through the streets of San Francisco. You got to picture that. And so there were a number of really more leftist groups than explicitly gay groups, at least for what I saw walking around the parade route. I didn't see, you know, sort of people that either people or organizations that are saying, you know, hi, we're here to represent Castro Street or whatever. I didn't see that along the parade route. I saw a group called Stop Patriarchy, which is, you know, kind of an old-time leftist revolutionary type of a group. And so in a sense, the opposition is wearing thin, I would say, Todd. You know, the arguments are no longer arguments. They're really cliches. That's all they've got is cliches. And they're just wearing out. They're wearing thin, you know. An old lady standing there with a coat hanger is a protest. I mean, that's a parody of itself. And the arguments have moved on. And
about
the people,
15 seconds here.
The pro-choice people are stuck in the 70s with the same old arguments, and young people simply aren't buying it, Todd.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. You can find out more about the blog and the website for the Ruth Institute at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you.
Thanks.
Tomorrow on Issues, Etc., we're going to talk to Pastor Brian Holly of Messiah Lutheran Church in Lebanon, Illinois, about the parable of the sower. It'll be our pastor's roundtable tomorrow on Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening, and I'll talk with you tomorrow.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Here are two new ways that you can promote Issues, Etc. The Issues, Etc. business card and the Issues, Etc. bulletin board flyer. Simply go to the support page at issuesetc.org, click Issues, Etc. business cards, print the page on suitable stock paper, and cut along the lines. We also have an 8.5 by 11 inch flyer for the bulletin board at your church. issuesetc.org, go to the support page, click Issues, Etc. bulletin board flyer, and print.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. with Thrivent Choice.